Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Talk about a creative woman. Holly Hines fits that bill and then some. She's an accomplished, sought-after costume designer with 250 ballets under her belt, more than 70 with the New York City Ballet, where she served as director of costumes for 21 years. Holly's designs have been worn by dancers around the world. If I named all the companies, there'd be no time for conversation. So here's a sample. American Ballet Theatre, the Bolshoi, National Ballet of Canada, La Scala Ballet in Milan, London's Royal Ballet, the Finnish National, Bulgarian State Ballet, Pacific Northwest Ballet in Seattle, and the Suzanne Ferrell Ballet at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, where she's been a resident costume designer for 15 years. Holly is a leading authority in the recreation of original designs for Balanchine and Robbins Ballet costumes. Her creativity isn't confined to ballet. Theatrical designs include a pair of Broadway productions, as well as a dozen plays and musicals off-Broadway. Designs for opera include La Gioconda at New York's Metropolitan Opera. Four of Holly's creations are part of the permanent collection of the Museum of the City of New York's Theater Wing, and her designs for six miniature ballerina dolls featured in the 1996 Christmas decorations at the White House are part of the permanent collection of the President William Jefferson Clinton Library in Little Rock. Oh, one more thing. Holly's a costume consultant and in that role offers costume Bibles containing detailed information about color, fabrics, trimmings, headpieces, and exact dimensions for each historical costumes. Enough already. Holly, welcome and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
What's your story, Holly? You sewed when you were a kid? You made costumes for your dolls? What?
I did dress my toy fox terrier up occasionally in
the
poor dog. And I guess my story started by studying theater in school, and I was probably a very active child, and my mother suggested that maybe I should go take drama lessons and get out of the house, and started off in theater and loved theater, and went to college at Coe College in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa.
Do we hold that against you?
I hope not. I hope that makes me a better person, Sandy. So in college, they had an off-campus opportunity called New York Term. And so I came to New York and I studied with four teachers in drama, music, dance, and art. And you also had to have an internship. And I interned with a professional costume designer. I was bit by the bug. I thought it was a great field. Went back to school, finished that. And then she invited me back to New York to work for her, which I did. And then she decided that maybe I wasn't the perfect material for freelance because I was scared of not having a weekly paycheck. Suggested I go work in a costume shop. I didn't even know there were costume shops. So I did. And from that experience, an opportunity came up to work with a famous costume maker named Barb Matera, who had her own shop. And she did a lot of dance, and she was looking for an assistant specifically for dance, which I knew nothing about.
I was just going to say, what'd you know about dance?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. I'd done a little American Dance Machine once, and that was about it. And a wise costume designer named Ann Roth said, you know, you'll be fine. She'd recommended me for the position. She said, it's just like theater, but the fabric stretches. I thought, well, I don't know if I would say that now. I think it's completely different. But I worked with Barbara in her shop for 5 years, and I learned a lot. And we did many, many dance productions. American Ballet Theatre was probably her largest client. So they were my first introduction to classical ballet. And then an opportunity came up to go up and be part of the workroom at the New York City Ballet. And Barbara and I went together, even though she had her own shop. So I went as the point person that could run the workroom with 21 people. And then she would check in at the end of the day or come up on Fridays, more like a consultant. And we did that for a couple of years, and then I was given the position of director of costumes, which was a little larger than what it had been, and that I took care now, or supervised, let's say, the wardrobe department and the hair and wig department and the shoe department and this costume shop of 20 people. So I did that for a long time. I did that until 2006.
From when?
From 1985,
mm-hmm. I think. That's a long time.
That's a long time. I met a lot of amazing dancers, amazing choreographers, great colleagues, had some unbelievable costume makers under my helm.
But you know what? It begs the question to me that it's one thing to be taught something. Mm. I'm hard-pressed to sort of follow this trajectory as I personalize it for myself. Right. I mean, did you know how to sew?
I did. I knew how to sew. I had taken art lessons. When I graduated from college, I had a degree in theater arts, which meant I had to take set design, lighting design, costume design. But I was an actor. I got out of school and thought I was going to come to New York and be an actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like I act a little bit every time I get an opportunity like this to talk about my experiences. But there's something that was more comfortable being behind the scenes than in front of the camera, so to speak. Just, I love that. I love being part of the process that figures out a problem, that figures out how to take something from a flat drawing and puts it into a three-dimensional moving artwork, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I like dealing with people, and that's why I think I was successful running that workroom, is because there were all these different people of from different countries, from different schools.
It's not
sizes.
Just being in the corner and stitching up something or
that's
working
right.
on a sewing machine, which is maybe what I thought it was might
sure.
be like. I
sure.
mean, it's much more involved than that.
Yes, and you're balancing all these different personalities, and then you've got the dancers coming in, and then you've got the choreographers coming in, and you've maybe got a lighting designer that changes all your colors on stage, and you've got to deal with that, or the wear and tear, something gets destroyed or lost, and you have to recreate it overnight, or you have to find a more economical way to recreate it. I mean, I think every class I ever took in school came into play in doing that position for that many years.
Is there more than one costume designer at New York City Ballet?
Absolutely.
So there's the head costume designer, which is what you eventually became.
Right.
And you come up with all the...
So you have someone in-house, let's say, that's available to choreographers if they come in and they don't know who they want to hire. But often a choreographer will come in and say, I have this person I'm used to working with, or I'd like to try this artist out, or I'm interviewing some people. I mean, every project is different. So the leeway is given to the choreographer. The company itself might make a recommendation, but often it's the choreographer that's hiring the costume designer. So that's why I can have a full career and not be connected directly with one company. Every project is a different choreographer or a different company, and you're hired for that particular project.
So there's a tremendous amount of flexibility, isn't there, in dealing with other human beings?
Yes.
And it
yes.
must be, on some level, a little fraught?
Sure. I mean, one nice thing I think about being a freelancer now is that when a ballet ends... It can end. You don't have to ever go work for that company again. You don't have to work with that choreographer again. If it was an awkward situation, you could walk away from it and you're done and you move on to the next thing. But the other side of that coin is if it's a fantastic experience, there's joyfulness knowing that, oh, God, I hope they call again, or I hope I get to go and do something again. And it's that repetitive work that I think is extremely exciting. I've have probably, I don't know, a dozen pieces with Christopher Wheeldon, for example, or similar with Alexei Romansky, both who are very proficient, prolific. And I'm, you know, thrilled every time the phone rings and they've got another project for me.
This may seem like almost a ridiculous question, but let me set this up for you. Swan Lake is Swan Lake, Holly, correct? When someone is going to stage their production of Swan Lake, that would require a different level of creativity?
That's a good question. I mean, there are some people that would rather die than do Giselle or do Swan Lake or do Sleeping Beauty.
Ho-hum, because it's
ho-hum. Yeah, it's old-fashioned, and there's so many rules, and you have to stick with the rules.
Right, there's a rigidity to something like that.
But I think maybe because of all the years I've spent trying to recreate the work by designers for Balanchine or for Robbins, that I love that. I mean, one of my degrees is in humanities, and that was, you know, the study of different cultures. And I don't know what you do with that degree now, and doesn't exist anymore at my college. But I think that made me gravitate to those traditional works and want to put my stamp on it. I mean, in the last 2 years, I've done 2 full-length Nutcrackers. And I think if you looked at both of them side by side, I don't know that you could tell the same person designed them. And I take great pride in that.
Mm.
And yet they're both very classical. You get what you expect for getting a Nutcracker. So I don't shy away from doing the classics.
How much leeway do you have? How much freedom do you have in designing costumes? And who is it that you must answer to? Is it George Balanchine?
Well, Mr. B is no longer with us.
But there
certainly are people who are quick to give you their opinion of what they think he would have wanted or what he would not like that you've got up there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the Balanchine Trust, even when I do a new look for an existing ballet, say for Suzanne Farrell's company, for example, and there are many reasons why that decision is made. One is money. When Balanchine was doing the original Kerenska works, the sky was the limit.
In terms of budget.
Right. So not every company has it within their ability to recreate those amazing 1940s or 1960s costumes. So I try to do something that it is equally as enjoyable to look at, that fits the ballet, but maybe isn't as costly as the original production. Now, that said, someone owns those ballets. So we think of the trust as protecting them, but often it's an ex-ballerina that owns a specific ballet. So
what does that mean? What do you mean by that?
That means Balanchine gave the rights to the ballet to that dancer. So if there are royalties to be absorbed, the dancer has some income.
Interesting.
But that means
I didn't know that.
They also have permission to say, I didn't like what she drew. Well, I don't. Why has she put the principal
so
in blue?
So she has to be drawn into this. Her opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that I had no idea.
So there's all that coordination that has to go on. And I've been blessed. I mean, I think just once I had an issue where I needed to redesign something. And after the person that owned the ballet explained what their theory was, you know, I never danced. So
my point precisely.
I don't know that when they danced that ballet with Balanchine told them that their character was a vision or was a ghost, you know, for example.
Yes.
And maybe I
yes.
thought that she was the sister of the 8 boys in kilts behind her, you know.
Yeah.
So
uh-huh.
So there can be a different interpretation. And I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong, but you have to get together so that everybody's happy with the end product.
So why don't you take us through the process
of
choreographing designs, creating costumes for pick a ballet?
Well, I think for me, the easiest way is probably walk you through a current project. It's like when people say to me, what's your favorite ballet you ever designed? The one I'm currently doing, always. So I'm working on a new piece that is choreographed by Stanton Welsh. And Stanton is an Australian who lives in America, and he's the artistic director of the Houston Ballet. But he is hired outside of his company and for his company to create ballets. And the San Francisco Ballet has asked him to come and do a new piece, and 11 other choreographers. They have a festival in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of 12 ballets.
In this performance.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it will, I think it's over a 4-week period or something like that. It's like a whole month of ballets.
So for 12 ballets, there will be 12 different costume designers?
That's correct.
Whoa,
that's correct.
Crazy, isn't
that's
it?
That's crazy, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've been involved in festivals at New York City Ballet and at San Francisco
before. So you're
before.
Used to this.
I'm used to it. In those cases, I did more than one. In this particular case, I'm only doing stands. So the process is that first and foremost always comes the music. And Stanton went through several different composers and settled on a Bach piece that, when I first heard it, seemed very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction to something like that is, so I'm going to go just the opposite. I'm going to give you a contemporary look that you won't expect when you hear this
piece. So you want to shake things up.
I want to shake things up a little bit. And his choreography then, he went into the studio in San Francisco and spent 3 weeks making the ballet for the dancers, which is a great way for designers to work, because now we have a video that we can watch over and over and over. And you see if somebody's dragged across the floor. You see if somebody's thrown in the air.
Right.
You see if partners switch with each other, which is always a factor if you've got partners teamed up to be the same color, but maybe they're only partners in the first movement. Maybe the rest of the ballet, they're with this guy or with this girl or somebody else. So it's almost like putting a puzzle together.
Yeah.
And that's why we'll watch something over and over and over, just to imagine what I'm watching, but in the clothes I'm envisioning.
It's very complicated, isn't it?
It's very complicated.
And maybe that's my own naivete, you know.
Well, I think that's the process I go through. I don't know that anybody else
would. Well, it's worked for you, hasn't it, woman?
Yeah, continues to work, I hope. So then I put a pencil to paper, and I'm old-fashioned that way. Will I eventually go into the world of computer? Maybe. But for the moment, I still really like working with pencil and watercolors. So I'll do a drawing that doesn't have any color, and I'll get that approved first so that somebody's committing to the shape, because you can always change color. But I want them to agree that the men are in pants or the girls are in a leotard or there's a skirt or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then once that's approved, then I can assign color to the dancers. But that means they have to commit to the casting too. And you're influenced by the casting, I am, because they're the original people that are creating this work. But you also have to keep in your mind that next year somebody else will dance it. Or maybe on Thursday somebody else will dance it. So I can't get real hooked up with, is this person a brunette? Is this person dark skin? Is this person got issues with their butt? I mean, that doesn't happen very much in ballet. Everybody's perfect. But you know what I'm
saying.
That's
why I never took a ballet.
There you go. Nor did I. And then once the color is approved, then you have to get an estimate from a shop. I'm not a maker. Some designers have their own shops. I do not. I mean, I have shops that I work with, and majority of those are in New York, but I also have a person in Chicago. I have a person in Houston. I have a milliner in upstate New York.
But when you've designed the costume, what comes with that is the fabric.
Yes.
You designed this tutu, and you're not, you know, maybe I'll make this out of linen, she says, sarcastically. But, I mean, that's also part of step
one. It's all part of it. So first you get your shop, you know, where you're going to have it made. Then you maybe go have a conversation with the draper. And the maker of the costume or the owner of the shop often is the head draper.
That's what they're called?
That's what they're called.
And because you're draping the outfit?
Correct. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the sketch and figuring out the pattern and advising the designer maybe on good ideas. So, for example, the San Francisco is going to be made at a costume shop called Signe Studios, which is in New York City. So I will go in and talk to Coco, who's the owner. And we've already talked on the phone a little bit about what the material could be. To save a little bit on money, it's better for me if I can find a material that is already in the color. Otherwise, it has to go to a dyer or a painter. Or sometimes even a printer, you know, if you want a specific, let's say you want silk georgette, but you want a pattern with Eiffel Towers on it or something. Now we can print that on the fabric.
Wow.
And in fact, in the maker I use in Chicago has a printer that when it's delivered to a shop, the pattern pieces are cut out based on the measurements of the dancer. It comes from the printer that way. So a whole step is eliminated in the process of the shop. So you got your color, you got your casting, you got the shape, you got the material picked. Now you get it put together without all its frou-frou, without the ornamentation, for fitting. And in this case, Coco and I'll have to fly to California and we'll fit the dancers in California. Then we come back to New York, goes back to her shop. The final product is put on, the elastics are put in, the trim is put on, you know, all the final details, the labels. And then all that gets shipped off to San Francisco. Coco won't go back to San Francisco, but I'll go back to San Francisco.
But hold on a second. In this specific ballet you're referencing, how large is the cast?
I think there's 6 couples.
So that's 12 people.
12 people on stage. But San Francisco Ballet will cast 3 sets of dancers.
So you're getting 3 sets of costumes?
No, because they don't have that much money.
But, right, because it's costly.
Yes, it is costly. And the time for a draper to be out of town doing the fittings is costly too. So you might have a half again. You might have maybe, in this particular case, the men are in sleeveless tops with long pants. So pants can kind of fit everybody if there's a leeway with the hem. So maybe you don't need 6 more pair of pants, but you might have 2 made, one for the short dancer and one for the tall dancer. The women in a leotard, it's a little more tricky. Plus, everybody has a specific color. So what I've made
that
in the
differentiates spell, them
correct.
From the other dancers.
So they have a similar silhouette, but this man and this woman have a rust, and this man and this woman have a teal accent. Mm-hmm. So if you're covering the teal girl, you need to either fit in that leotard or you'd have to have a leotard made in that teal color.
If you're dancing this
that
role.
That particular spot.
If you're not dancer A and you're dancer B.
That's right. Because you don't want to end up with two purple girls on the same stage if there's really only supposed to be one.
Okay.
And I did have that happen once. My first medium-sized ballet at the Bolshoi, when I got there, was a tech rehearsal. We were opening in 4 days. And a man in the corps de ballet came up to me and asked me in perfect English after the first run-through if he could talk to me. And I said, sure. And he said, I just wondered why you picked brown for my section. And it was kind of a rusty brown. And I said, well, it looks like Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the lighting. And mm-hmm. and I just thought that was a warmth that'd be really nice for the characters. And he said, well, you know, brown, it doesn't really look good on me.
Now, did that shock you that he said that?
It shocked me. That would never happen in the United States. But here was this a dancer that felt comfortable enough asking me if he could be a different color, that he'd maybe like to be the purple that this other man was wearing in a different section.
So what do you do about that?
I said, can I watch it one more time?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, absolutely. So I did. And then I went back to him and I said, I got to tell you, it's perfect for the movement.
Brown.
And if you're in that section, we're going to call it rust. Mm-hmm. Let's not call it brown. Mm-hmm. I think you've got mm-hmm. a thing about brown. Let's mm-hmm. get past that. Mm-hmm. So next day was a day off. Then we have one more performance before we're going to open in 2 more days. And I'm sitting in the audience and I have an interpreter with me and she's watching and she's all caught up in the wonder of ballet because this is new to her. And I'm like over it. I'm counting the hours till I'm getting on the plane. I'm ready to go home. And she says, Holly, I have to ask you, Boris...
Hello.
he was in brown 2 days ago, but now today he's in purple. And I went, oh, and I realized it looked good in the scene. I have to say, it didn't hurt the scene.
But
it was
Boris
handsome.
Took matters into his own
but
hands.
But that meant that Matthew still had purple on, and he's going to show up in the finale, and there's going to be two boys in purple.
Right.
Well, I was furious.
Right.
And what had happened was the dancer had taken the second costume off the rack that was for the second cast.
Boris did.
Mm-hmm. And put it on himself. Those aren't their real names. But
yeah,
yes.
It'll do. Yeah, so Boris had a lot of balls.
Boris had a lot of balls. And it became a dispute between the management and myself. And the choreographer was a little casual about it. And he said, they're going to work it out. And what they said was, can we please let this man wear the purple for the opening night. After that, we'll put that section back in the brown. And I said, the critics will come opening night. They're going to see the purple. And I'm not a fighter. I mean, I'll pick my battles. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to fight over this. So he wore purple for that.
So Boris was a very determined dancer, and he wanted to have what he wanted to have.
And that's the only time in my whole career that that's happened or bunted heads and just let them have the purple.
As you were telling the story, though, about designing costumes for these 6 couples, mm-hmm. so 12 people, what about a ballet where the corps de ballet is dancing there, that you have the principals, and then you got 87 people on stage there dancing? What the hell does that mean for you?
Well, I think one risk you have to be careful of is don't put all your money on the corps. So what can happen is, in my mind, when I first started out, for example, if I knew there were 36 people in the background, that's 36 times, or 18 and 18, 18 times that this sketch I've done is going to be made. Well, I want that to look fabulous.
18 times, what is that?
Because there's going to be 18 girls
and 18 women. Okay, okay.
So if I've done this drawing and I love it, do I put that on the principal or do I have 18 of those made? I thought you have 18 of those made. And then I just kept very simple for the principal. Now that works in that you've got this rich scene behind them and that makes the simple costume pop. But all the pictures of your beautiful 36 people ballet in the paper is the very simple costume on the pas de deux.
Yeah.
Nobody
yeah.
sees those background people unless they go to the performance. So I learned that early on and mm-hmm. that maybe it's better to find a happy medium in between. So make an interesting background behind that principal couple, but also remember that the spotlight's on them. The corps de ballet is going to disappear, and they're who our focus is
going to
be. They're the ones we're going to remember iconically for that ballet. Case in point is the Christopher Wilden ballet called After the Rain. Nobody knows. There's 6 people in that ballet. Everybody thinks After the Rain is this pas de deux, one uh-huh. girl, one boy.
Right.
And it is, but that's part 2 of the ballet. The first part is that same couple and 2 other couples in different costumes. So unless you've been to New York City Ballet or one of the few companies that does the whole thing, you think it's just a pas de deux with the two people and their simple yoga clothes and a leotard, you know? So you've got to be prepared that the work's going to be represented possibly by two dancers or maybe by the whole look. It could go either way. And it's iconic. It's going to live on. So I guess you have to do a happy medium. You have to be happy with both looks.
You know, I'm sort of struck by the image that it's not only dancers who have the flexibility in their bodies. Yeah, I'll use this word, the machinations that you have to go through. It's jaw-dropping to me because I just never had any idea. And I bet that the average Jane doesn't.
They see
the costumes and, they're dancing and have no clue what you go through and how different that is from Broadway.
But on Broadway, usually, traditionally, you're not thinking about the same things that you are when you're doing dance or
because of the movement.
Dance. Because they've got to be able to move, because of the line, because you don't want the costume to get in the way of the line of the dancer.
Right. So less is more?
Less is more, often. Mm. Yeah. And I think sometimes new dance designers get a little tied up in the sort of fashion look or the artistry of taking fabric and putting it on a dancer and thinking of it as this big canvas. You know, a dancer really is a very tiny person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think less is best. But the less you have to work with, the harder it is. The harder it is. Mm. It is really difficult to do very, I think, simple costumes.
Dancers have incredible bodies, obviously. How much of a factor is that in terms of costume designing, as in highlighting their bodies, highlighting the musculature? And I mean, obviously they have to be able to move. I understand that.
Yeah.
But how much of a factor is that in terms of highlighting their bodies?
It's an art form, but in a way it's also an athletic sport.
Exactly. And, you know, my point. Exactly.
And you're paying that money to see that great shape and to see those muscles and to see their artistry. We have a mutual friend in Wendy Whalen, and, you know, Wendy, it's no secret, had scoliosis, and there could be different times of the year where she'd be out of alignment and might be a little more difficult. And when you make a costume for someone like that, I was never afraid to change the center back seam for Wendy, you know, and a lot of people wouldn't do that. They would think, well, why are we custom making this for this dancer? Because this dancer is going to look better if the costume appears to be made for her body. Nobody in row R is going to see that the center seam is off a little bit because of her backbone, but it's going to make the whole garment rest on her body a better way. That's why I want to know who the cast is before I
So you're,
can.
For the most part, familiar with the dancers.
Yes. And if I knew that someone was uncomfortable with the size of their thigh, you know, we might adjust, God forbid, adjust the leg line so that it's not cut real high, but it's also not a boy short. It might be somewhere in between.
Mm.
So there are little tricks. Also, I encourage dancers in a fitting to use their voice. And, you know, it's an art form where they don't speak. They're not used to having opinions, especially corps de ballet. So if it's a first fitting, I'll say to dancers, tell me, if you look in the mirror and yourself in clothes all the time, if you wish that your sleeve was a quarter inch shorter because you know that muscle's going to show, and I'm looking at the hem and I'm looking at how it's draped across your chest, maybe I'm not going to catch that. Tell me. Tell me, and I'll pin it up and we'll look at it together and we'll decide if, you know, this happens with the length of a skirt with women, especially. You know what skirt length looks best on your leg.
Mm.
You know, I'm maybe fitting 38 people that day. So I always will say to dancers, if it's a dancer I've never worked with before, in the first fitting,
talk to me.
If you complain to me about your costume when we're on stage in a dress rehearsal, I'm not going to be happy camper.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck. I won't have time or manpower to fix it. But if you can help me make you look better, I want to know. So tell me.
I really am overwhelmed with all this information that I knew nothing about. Can we move from the States to your work overseas?
Sure.
How did that come to pass? Just word of mouth and people wanted you and that you would be guest costume designer for the Bulgarian shape.
I know. How did I get to Bulgaria?
Yeah, really. At least you got out.
That's right. That's right. No, that was a good experience. Twofold. One is you make a connection with a choreographer, and if they're comfortable using you and there's a friendship that happens, if you will, when their work goes overseas or they get a project overseas, they'll want to bring you along. So there is a strength, I think, for choreographers and directors, too, to have a team of people that you like working with. And I'm part of a number of different teams, and that's great. I love that. That was one reason that took me overseas. Another was the blessing of the Balanchine Trust. And the first time I was asked to recreate Kerenska's Jewels was for the Mariinsky in St. Petersburg. So the very first time I had to do that, I had to go to Russia. And that was an experience. And that I learned a lot from doing that. And I think I earned, if you can earn the respect of a Russian ballet company, word of mouth gets out.
Yeah, that must have been huge.
That was pretty huge. But I think along those lines, there's a Alexei Romansky piece called DSCH, Shostakovich Concerto. And we did it in St. Petersburg maybe 2 years ago. And it was a new director, and it's all new dancers. And it's, you know, when you're doing something when you're in your 30s versus later in your career, the scenario is completely different.
You're talking about you or the dancer?
I'm talking about me.
Okay.
So when I was there first,
yeah,
I had memories of that and, you know, fear of going to Russia in the 80s and somebody knocking me down to steal the blue jeans off my legs. This is what my Russian seamstresses told me would happen. Be careful. I made my husband go with me the first trip. And then when I went back, it was this whole different place. And maybe because I was at ease and I wasn't nervous, but...
And you had ballets under your belt.
And I had ballets under my belt. And one of the greatest compliments was the dinner afterwards. And the director, it was all in Russian. And lucky me had Alexei Romansky translating for me. And he said, oh, he's talking about you now. And I went, oh, what's he going to say about me? What was this? And he said to this full room of Russians that he really felt my designs for DSCH and working with the ladies in his workroom and the men in his tailoring department, that I was, from that moment on, an honorary Russian.
Wow.
This is at the Kirov. This is
wow.
Like, I mean, I started to cry. It was like the sweetest,
well, it
greatest
was the
compliment
truth
they could have given me.
Whoa.
And that's really a hard place to work. So I feel really good that I had that and that helped build my character. So that I could go to Bulgaria, or I could go to La Scala, mm-hmm. or I could go to these other countries.
London and France and whatever.
Oh, Paris mm. Opera, what a joy.
And, yeah, really.
And Royal uh-huh. Ballet, too. Those are not a stretch. I'm mm-hmm. available anytime you need me. But I also think traveling is tough, and the older they get, the older it gets.
You have a family.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And, but that family has benefited from it, too. They've been able to go on travels with me and stuff, so...
Did you do any costume designing for modern dance?
The short answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And I get hired, I think, because I'm good with color and I'm good with shape. And often,
are you comfortable doing modern dance?
Very much, mm-hmm. very much. Mm-hmm. I love modern dance as well. I love all dance. And I think specifically one reason is because I don't have to deal with the shoes. That's the one part of theater that I just hated, getting
Isn't
some
that
actress
hilarious?
That would say, no, I don't, let me try the eight. No, maybe I should try the 8.5. I thought, God, if I wanted to be tortured like this, I could go work at Nordstrom's, you know, and get benefits. So I decided to, when I realized I could go into dance and the question was flats or point.
Gotcha.
Oh, great.
That's it,
you
one
know,
or the other.
Every
mm-hmm.
once in a while, there's a character shoe sneaks in or some lace-up Oxford on the boys.
But you can live with
or
that.
Or a sneaker,
yeah.
you know, Jerry yeah. and his sneakers. So, but that was great. That was very comfortable. So,
are you an independent contractor?
I am.
Except when you work for the New York City Ballet.
When I worked for New York City Ballet, there were benefits for that position. But I'm married, so I have my benefits with my husband.
It's kind of the Holly Hines company in a
Correct.
Sense.
Correct.
So where are you today and where do you think you're going to be tomorrow?
Oh, good question. You know, it's funny. There are people who ask my husband and I, oh, when are you guys going to retire? And I think, I can't retire. I've only been a freelance costume designer full time for 11 years. I feel like I'm at the very beginning of my career because I transitioned.
The versatility of
yes.
it as opposed to not that it was a bad thing just working for the New York City Ballet,
right.
but that you've got the world is sort of your oyster.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I could just go till I don't. There's a wonderful designer who passed away recently named Willa Kim, who did Broadway and ballet and dance. She was 99 and she was still working.
Jeez.
She was mm-hmm. still working. Mm-hmm. I mean, down on her hands and knees, pinning a hem and still doing renderings and still taking the subway and still shopping. And I don't know if I'll make it to 99, but I'd like to think that...
You got a lot of costumes still left in you.
Yeah, because, you know, if I do the math and I figure out between 4 and 10 ballets a year, well, that could add up, you know, if I'm lucky, 125 ballets. That doesn't seem like a lot of ballets to me.
What's an average year for you?
Well, it depends. The last 2 years, because there were these nutcrackers involved, a little less, but usually maybe 8 to 10 ballets.
And is that a good balance?
That's a good balance.
Where you cannot be dancing as fast as you can.
I know. And I love having a full-length ballet. That was really great. And to finish those two nutcrackers back-to-back and then get a call from American Ballet Theater to ask me if I would come be the associate designer on their production of Whipped Cream, which was their big thing they just did in the spring. And that was a ballet designed by a surrealist painter named Mark Ryden, who had never done costumes, never done sets before. He'd done dioramas in his artwork, which were almost like little set pieces. So I think the set part came a little easier to him than the costume part did. So that was like doing a full-length nutcracker. So in a way, it felt like three nutcrackers in a row. And my husband and I were laughing because he said, oh, you know, our backyard really looks good this year and your flowers look great on the porch. And I said, you know, this is the first year in like 6 years that I've seen tulips. Because in the spring, I'm always off doing something.
Yeah.
You know, I plan them, but I never get to see them. So it's been a great summer in that I could kind of relax a little bit, put my feet up.
This next question probably is a little unfair. That's like saying, which one of your children do you like the most? But let me just go for the obvious. Do you have a favorite costume designing experience with a favorite dancer company?
I've had some really, really lucky opportunities with designing for Wendy.
And she was one of the best interviews. I just so adored meeting her.
So good. She had a great time. And I think back to that After the Rain Again, which if anybody looks at those costumes, they'll go, oh, big deal. She drew a leotard. But you had to figure out what the fabric was, what the color was, what the cut was. She has no tights on. You have to figure out how is that going to stay down on her butt and not slide up into a thong. I mean, there are a lot of problems that come with that. And I think to being in the studio as an invited guest, just me and Chris Wilden and Jacques Soto and Wendy Whalen, and they ran the pas de deux for me. And I started to cry. And Wendy, I remember, said to me, are you okay? And I remember saying, allergies. Oh, this is the worst time of year. Because I'm embarrassed that I have just been so caught up in how beautiful that was. So it truly is probably the simplest thing I've ever done. But that will always hold a part of my heart, that ballet. And that was the one they danced for 9/11 on the top of a building on the 10th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't Wendy. It was two other dancers, Maria Karofsky and Ash LaCour. So it means different things for different people. But, boy, it meant a lot for me.
You know, obviously, it's not a perfect road to hoe all the time, but it really sounds like when you leave these mortal coils, you can say that your work, at least I think you can say, has been this amazing labor of love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope it gives people pleasure, and I hope the work lives on longer than I do.
Well, I think
it will.
I think we can take that to the bank.
Good.
Holly Hines, thank you so
much,
Sandy,
for sharing so
your
much
career
fun.
And your life.
Thank
and
you.
I learned so much.
Good.
I will never look at ballet in the same way.
Then we're successful. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.